better to Jackie Robinson, the first black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects history to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. This release is co-presented by Desta Black Youth Network, Tyndale St. George's Community Center, Canteen Bergs.
My name is Al Yaw. I'm at CKOT in Montreal, 90.3 FM. Keep on rocking in the free world.
Hello and good evening and welcome to the June 16th edition of Dromotext. Tonight we'll be listening to the complete collection of Fluxus author, artist, composer Ben Patterson, his Fluxus stories. Ben Patterson had an extraordinary life. I'll read a little bit from his Wikipedia entry. He was born 1934, died 2016. Musician, artist, one of the founders of the Fluxus movement. He was born in Pittsburgh in 1934, attended the University of Michigan from 1952 to 56. He studied the contrabass, composition, and film direction. As an African-American musician, he found it impossible to get a job at a symphony orchestra in the United States, so he started playing with Canadian orchestras. From 1956 to 1960, he worked as the double bassist at the Halifax Symphony Orchestra, and he then worked with the U.S. Army 7th Symphony Orchestra up until 1959, Ottawa Philharmonic Orchestra, 1959 and 60, and in 1960, he moved to Cologne, where he encountered the radical contemporary music scene, and he played between 1960 and 1962 with the members of the Fluxus group, and he's considered one of the founding members of Fluxus. He participated in the first Fluxus music festival in Wiesbaden. In 1965, he decided to retire from art, lead a normal life, and afterwards he held a number of positions as a director of symphony orchestras, ensembles. He was an assistant cultural director at Cultural Affairs for New York City. He did occasionally present his work in later life, working at presenting at the Sao Paulo Biennale in the early 1980s. Well, here's Ben Patterson and his Fluxus stories.
Thank you very much for this chance to talk to you. And let's not be very official. Just start. So we're talking about Fluxus. We're talking about a kind of early 60s art movement. And one of the questions probably that many people ask you, why Fluxus? What's the name from? And what's the basic idea of Fluxus? What kind of movement is it?
The name Fluxus is really unimportant. It could have been almost any other name, except that in Lithuanian, which is the native speech of George Mičiūnas, apparently Fluxus means liberty, freedom, and so forth. Dictionary meanings give Fluxus a Latin origin meaning flowing, why Fluxus? What happened at that point in the late 50s, early 60s was that a number of artists in Germany, in England, in France, in Italy, USA, Korea all were dissatisfied with the status quo and began to look at other ways of making art, other means of perceiving reality. And quite independent of each other, they more or less, you could say, a general spirit developed among these people. How it became Fluxus is that there was this Lithuanian artist, architect, born in Lithuania, moved through Wiesbaden to USA, back to Wiesbaden, began to collect information about all of these people and decided we have to make a big deal about this. And so his interest was to make a magazine called Fluxus, which should present all of the newest arts. And then the idea to promote this magazine, there would be a festival of performing arts, newest arts in Wiesbaden. That was really fashion show, music and Wiesbaden. And so the original idea for the festival was as a promotional for the magazine. As we know, in the meantime, the magazine, there were one or two issues that happened, but what came out of the festival and the what do you want to say? The scandal, the notoriety, the development, and also the focus on a particular kind of work made Fluxus what Fluxus has become. I say focus on a particular kind of work because in the original program, there was Stockhausen, Nono, Berio, Boulez, Pierre Schaeffer, these people, dance, ballet, and so forth, new stuff. But there was this one little corner where people dripped water from a ladder into a bucket or banged on a piano 566 times or tore up paper. And the critics didn't understand what the name of this thing was. They knew what Boulez and Nono and Stockhausen was. That was serial music. And here was Pierre Schaeffer with concrete, musique concrete. But what's this strange stuff here? That has to be Fluxus. Even though nobody knew before that that was going to be Fluxus.
Yeah.
Fluxus was just a title like Time Magazine or Life Magazine. And that's part of the problem of defining what Fluxus is, because it's like Life Magazine or Spiegel.
Just a name.
Yeah, it's a name.
Okay, so we know, we heard about the name Fluxus, but there was something where you were talking about, the corner where the strange things happened. What was the impetus or what was the idea, maybe the connecting idea between those people who then were termed Fluxus? What was common?
I think one of the most important common aspects were that many of these artists were trained musicians, and so their sense of art and development came from music. One other aspect which is important in terms of music is that, okay, there was a great protest, let's say, against the materialism of the art market and buying and selling and so forth was not what we, as young idealists who wanted to change the world, thought was the purpose of art, and that was to change the way people think or to open their thinking. And the buying and selling of works of art didn't fit that pattern. And you can only buy and sell something which has material, physical presence. So an important aspect of Fluxus was that, early Fluxus, let's say, was that the manifestation of the art should be immaterial. So that's why it became music or performance or events or, quote, happenings were a bit suspicious, but events were clear there. So that it was something that you experience, and that was it. You couldn't take it away. So I think that was one of the common factors which why somebody in Korea or Japan or in New York or in Moscow, for instance, all had this idea in their head or this feeling at that period. I don't know. It was, you know, all of the things that were at the late 50s, pre-60s. Yeah.
That sounds a little bit like... Now, talking about the immaterial aspect of Fluxus art, I wonder if also maybe the immediate contact with an audience is intended and an important element of the work.
Okay, as I suggested before, many of us came from a music background, and as performing musicians, you recognize as when you have a live audience, when you have a dead audience, when you have a so what audience, as a performer you react to that. Apparently you're just, you know, doing your thing, but you sense what the audience is hearing, feeling, and whether they're supporting you or uninterested or whatever. That's, you know, whether you're playing Beethoven or George Brecht. And the same thing happens here. Obviously, the the idea was that the work should communicate. was not just for oneself. We want other people, wanted other people to know, to hear, to understand, to be provoked, to be changed, or whatever. You know.
Yeah, it's another word that I was thinking about. Provocation, rebellion, something that has a maybe even aggressive element in it, something that is strong enough to wake people up. Was it something?
Yeah, as I said, we were all young idealists and we wanted to change the world. So, obviously provocation in one form or another was part of what we were doing, but I think it was not provocation for provocation's sake. One recognized that, okay, if you announce this is a quintet for paper, and you start tearing up paper and throwing it into the audience, they're going to be surprised. But on the other hand, my initial interest in making this piece was the sound of paper, which is a extraordinarily variable instrument. On one side, theoretically, it was hard and consequent. On the other side, you recognize, well, that's going to surprise them. So what?
It's a nice demonstration even right there, even for the microphone, I think. That works well. I was reading about this piano action piece, and maybe
by
I had
Philip
that
Korner,
in, yeah. Maybe I had that in mind as I...
Yeah, that's another aspect of the same thing. Philip had designed this work to extract other sounds from a piano that one normally experiences. What was it? Okay, well, in any case, so the idea was...
This piece has a violent surface, I could almost say.
On the surface, it's, well, in 1962, it was violent, because the piano was the instrument that every German family of standing had in their house, right? House music. It's holy. And suddenly this piano was not only scratched, but it's banged on and hammered and sawed up and crushed and blah, blah, blah. Which was in the extreme that it was performed in Wiesbaden was not the original ambition of Philip Korner. He said later, I didn't intend for it to go so far, but okay. And of course that is the scandal that opened the media's eyes to this is something new. Yeah. And actually the sounds that erupted from this action were not much different than what they were doing in the electronic music studio or Music Concrete. But the fact that it was being done on this holy instrument, even though it was a junk piano, you know, which I think George paid 5 marks for or something, it cost more to get rid of it than he had to pay for it. But the symbolism, of course, was what struck the note, you know, and opened the eyes. So.
Yeah. For the audience there, but also for the media picking up on that thing that you just mentioned, did you have a problem with the way the media reacted? Or first of all, how did media and newspaper and TV and whatever it was, how did they react and how was your reaction to their reaction?
Actually, the media was not so bad with that. Okay, this little film, on a short film, the cameraman or the editor decided he had to do fluxes also, so sometimes it gets turned on its head and so forth like that. But they kind of accepted it. The press, if I remember... So, okay, a scandal, blah, blah, blah. But Those were very interesting times then, 60, 61, 62. Everything was shaking. And so they were prepared mentally to accept change. Now it's the time to look at something else. As far as our reaction to the press, what? Who cares? Nobody expected to be applauded, like that. You do what you have to do. The press was secondary.
But coming back to the first question of how the name came about and how the publicity came, even if it didn't change your work, maybe, but it the press did make a name for Fluxus, and so maybe scandalous thing for the media, more and more people knew about it. So was there an influence coming from that event and from the press publication?
It's a long story. I'm sorry I'm taking so much time to answer this, but okay. In the beginning, there was not Fluxus. There was Emmett Williams, there was Ben Patterson, there was George Brecht, there were all of these people, Io, Kusugi, doing these things. Then happened this festival, Fluxus. Ah! It's like surrealism or pop art or something is there. And these artists are all part of that. Then what is the Fluxus aesthetic? There, I can show you that many catalogs and books, and people are still trying to nail it down. And it can't be, there's a sort of joint spirit or friendship and general understanding of how you go about making art. But in terms of we only use red or only straight lines, cubism or pop figures, that doesn't exist. So then, what is Fluxus? Became a big problem for so-called second generation. Am I a Fluxus artist or not? I am a Fluxus artist because I do this, or I am a Fluxus artist because I do that. And so in that sense, the press and the media did influence the work of some people, I would say, over some period. I think it would have been, it would be dishonest to say that one was not aware that I am a Fluxus artist and my work should look Fluxian. If you understand what I mean. If you decide to make landscape paintings, then we have to redefine Fluxus to have landscape paintings, which I have done also.
In a way, we talked about this earlier, the impetus of Fluxus, the waking up people, the provocative element, the new perspective on this perceiving thing, which talk about perception, but also, but then in society, all these things came, and you already said the 60s, the early 60s were very intense times, and the late 60s.
Also, the explosion happened.
Right. Yeah. So, do you see a
Well, it, let's say that in 1960, 61, 62, I filled the teakettle, or we filled the teakettle, and then we turned the stove on, and it took until 68 for it to boil. In so many words, if you understand that. I won't say that artists created the revolution, but the myth is has been that artists perceive or have a sense of the smell of brewing events. Unruhe auf Deutsch, unrest, that something is changing. And I think that was the point that we were at in the 60s. Okay, not only Foxes, but also the, everything else that was happening. If a realist in Paris, the Zero Group here in Germany, even in music and so forth, so I think we went further, but everybody was looking for or sensing now there's something new. And that it, from this moment of sensing that something's going to change until, let's say, 67, 68. So I get on my bad wagon now. Fluxus was, one, the first truly international art movement spanning from South East Asia, Northeast Asia, through the United States, through all of Western Europe and so forth, and also one of the first movements where its rights were up there. one could also say, yeah, I'm black. The first time that a man of color was an important cultural figure, even in Germany. That, and then the other aspect. What I think is interesting about Fluxus is that now, this is 2002, and people really want to celebrate 40 years of Fluxus. Yeah. It's never happened before. Who's celebrating 40 years of Nouveau Realism? Or who's celebrating 40 years of Surrealism? Or even Dada, not only the retrospective things, but to put it on the shelf. We're doing this now. I mean, there's just the big festival of Italy now. There's X number of things in France, in Spain, USA. Somehow or other, that's a, you know, it's evidence of the importance of Fluxus that people are, not only just us that are, the few that are still alive, but other people are pushing to do it.
For a German audience, it would be interesting to understand, first of all, the international aspect, but then how come it's a German thing? It's so it's important to pin it down to Germany in Wiesbaden.
Yeah, in a way, it was accidental that it was Wiesbaden. In another way, because I would say of the philosophical input of Fluxus. There are not many places that it could have happened other than Germany, or maybe France, or maybe England. But you have to remember that point in the 60s, there was also Wittgenstein was being recognized really as an important philosopher for the first time. And if you considered yourself a thinking person, you had to have read Hegel and Kant and Nietzsche and Wittgenstein and da-da-da, which doesn't happen anymore, you know. Heidegger, Adorno was, no, Walter Benjamin, no television. That's what we went to bed with. What else can you do?
Yeah, I mean, the rebellion, it's sort of a, I don't know how to say it, it's like a hate love kind of thing. I mean, about this picture, you take in that input from philosophy and high culture in a way.
Yeah.
But then the language you speak is not at all academic.
It's a different language, yeah. Okay, let's put it this way. Okay, I have this classic music background. I still love Beethoven, I still love Bach, I still love Brahms. You look at my record collection and there's very... I hope I don't have any stock up. But it's, you know, everything else, Ravel and Ibanez. They're there because they were great musicians. They were good composers. The problem that I had with how they were perceived or how they were presented in a concert hall had nothing more to do with the music or what they were trying to do. It was much more about society, who's sitting in the first row, how wavy is the hair of the conductor? Does he wiggle his rear end well? You know, and all of these marketing things, and really had nothing to do with the music. So, in a sense, that was part of my three operas: Madame Butterfly, Carmen, Tristan, Isolde. All three in 1 hour. So it's not, some people think of it as a persiflage, but it's not really that. It's a tribute to them, but reduced and pointed in a different direction so that, that's what it was about. It's not about how much you paid for your ticket, you know, or if you are in the royal box, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Now that makes me, not meaning to interrupt you, but that makes me think of the specific German situation. It's early 60s, that is the time after the war was just over. You could begin to feel, okay, the immediate after-war period is over, but still it wasn't really over. So people still had the feeling of, let's get away from that, and they were hungry for art, but also to cover maybe things up. Let me just get this historical question. Do you feel that in Fluxus there is also a comment on how people dealt with the war period and the after-war period? I don't know if that's a very good question.
I'll try to answer that, but first just make the comment. That I arrived in Cologne 1960 and lived in Kupfergasse, which is now, then was sort of like over there, and Vede Air was here. Now Vede Air covers the whole thing. But at that point, between Kupfergasse and the radio station, was still Trümmerfeld. There were one or two houses, but it was still Trümmerfeld, bricks and so forth, not built at all. And of course, Vede Air was brand new building, most modern electronic music studio in the world at that time. But between here and there was clear evidence of what had happened. And you couldn't forget that. You couldn't ignore it. Back to your question. Did Fluxus react to how people reacted to this?
Surface superficial things.
No, I think or at least my answer to that question is that Cologne really was the center of new art at that point. Fluxus happened here in Wiesbaden is purely accidental, but the new music was there, the artists and so forth. And so there, I think one could say that there was a sense, now's time to rebuild something new. We know what happened then, flat, we're starting again. And that was why Adorno, blah, 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 the electronic music studio, all of that was important at that point. And people coagulated around that. Here is where the stew is being made. Curiously, not Paris, because it was Paris was Paris, it's Paris, it's Paris. Cologne was flat, and now we're starting again.
And I was also thinking about another link to Butschke that we talked about earlier, because I think historians would say that one major impetus of the was differently maybe than generation clash was a thing in Germany where you could not identify with that generation. It had been in the war in the 50s.
Two different situations, I think. In the U.S., there was the generation gap was not the problem. It was, first the racial thing, and then the women's movement, which made the two big changes, I think. But I think I understand what you mean about the generational gap here, because those that were Adolf generation, nobody could understand how you could believe this man, how you could go through that. I mean, the younger generation, and I know there was huge splits in families because of that.
But I did understand that in the immediate Fluxus work, what you did and your colleagues and friends did there was not really meant politically as an explicit comment to that. It was just sort of in the atmosphere a little bit.
This is the Fluxus problem. There's German fluxus, there's French fluxus, there's American fluxus, there's Japanese fluxus. more specifically, there's Vostell and Beuys fluxus, although Beuys was, you know, in and out quickly. Vostell carried the label for a long time. His work was purposefully political, exaggerated political, in my view. But Beuys was political in another sense, in a more general sense. Beyond that, in the U.S., let's say the American fluxus, only one or two, three, maybe four people in the early days, well, actually more, come to think of it, 62, 65 through 68, whatever, if you weren't left, you weren't fluxus, you know, I mean, there was no place else to be other than left liberal. You know. You had to be concerned with human rights, with women's rights. You had to be against the Vietnam War, all of those things. And that oftentimes made you very close to the red side of the label, right? Which I don't think too many people are worried about. Not everybody, but people that work with language, of course.
So now in 2002, it's 40 years.
Yeah.
After the main event, which was this festival.
Yeah.
But so Fluxus is remembered, Fluxus is regarded as important, but is there still Fluxus art life in the present?
My answer would be that as long as myself and Emmett Williams and George Brecht and Alice Knowles and Eric Anderson are still alive, we're going to make our art, and that will be called Fluxus Art. that's the way it goes. I was just looking, I can see it here, but one of my nicer projects that I have initiated continue in the last few years, I think it's maybe 5 years old now, is the Museum for the Subconscious, which is located everywhere, nowhere, of course. But since people like to have physical thing, the entrance to the museum is a cave in a mountain in the middle of the desert in Namibia. And there is a plaque. Odenwald Rote Sandstein says, Museum of the Subconscious, founded, blah, blah, blah. Mounted in the side of the mountain. So, is that Fluxus? And we have a catalog. That is, there's a website, right? What else? Can't have paper for a museum of the subconscious, so it's all, again, immaterial. And you can check the website. And no, it's not here. And see who has pledged their subconscious to the museum. naturally after they die. Although I've had a couple requests, do I have to wait until I die? Can I give it to you now?
Well, I hope you enjoyed these Fluxus stories by Fluxus artist Benjamin Patterson. Check out his wiki page and learn more of his quite extraordinary career. One of the founding members of the Fluxus group, working in the early 1960s as both a musician and a musical composer. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial. This is Drama Text. We're here once a week with the spoken word. This is a special COVID-19 edition. We've been broadcasting or preparing the shows from our homes over the last, well, since the middle of March. So I'm going to finish off tonight's show with the work of Michel Lalonde and her iconographic poem entitled Speak White. Well, here it is. This is Michel Lalonde and Speak White.
Speak White. Il est si beau de vous entendre parler de Paradise Lost ou du profil gracieux et anonyme qui tremble dans les sonnets de Shakespeare. Nous sommes un peuple inculte et bègue, mais ne sommes pas sourds au génie d'une langue. Parlez avec l'accent de Milton et Byron et Shelley et Keats. Speak white. Et pardonnez-nous de n'avoir pour réponse que les chants rauques de nos ancêtres et le chagrin de Nelly Gant. Speak white. Parlez de choses et d'autres. Parlez-nous de la Grande Charte ou du monument à Lincoln, du charme gris de la Tamise, de l'eau rose de la Potomac. Parlez-nous de vos traditions. Nous sommes un peuple peu brillant, mais fort capable d'apprécier toute l'importance des crumpets ou du Boston Tea Party. Mais quand vous really speak white, quand vous get down to brass tacks, pour parler du gracious living et parler du standard de vie et de la grande société, un peu plus fort alors, speak white, haussez vos voix de contremaître. Nous sommes un peu durs d'oreilles. Nous vivons trop près des machines et n'entendons que notre souffle au-dessus des outils. Speak white and loud, qu'on vous entende, de Saint-Henri à Saint-Domingue. Oui, quelle admirable langue pour embaucher, donner des ordres, fixer l'heure de la mort à l'ouvrage et de la pause qui rafraîchit et ravigote le dollar. Speak white, tell us that God is a great big shot and that we're paid to trust him. Speak white, parlez-nous production, profits et pourcentages. Speak white, c'est une langue riche pour acheter. Mais pour se vendre à perte d'âme, mais pour se vendre. Oh, speak white, big deal. Mais pour vous dire l'éternité d'un jour de grève, pour raconter l'histoire d'un peuple concierge. Mais pour rentrer chez nous le soir, à l'heure où le soleil s'en vient crever au-dessus des ruelles, mais pour vous dire, oui, que le soleil se couche, oui, chaque jour de nos vies à l'est de vos empires. Rien ne vaut une langue à jurons. Notre parlure pas très propre, tachée de cambouis et d'huile. Speak white. Soyez à l'aise dans vos mots. Nous sommes un peuple rancunier, mais ne reprochons à personne d'avoir le monopole de la correction du langage. Dans la langue douce de Shakespeare, avec l'accent de Longfellow, parlez un français pur et atrocement blanc, comme au Vietnam, au Congo. Parlez un allemand impeccable, une étoile jaune entre les dents. Parlez russe, parlez rappel à l'ordre, parlez répression. Speak white, c'est une langue universelle. Nous sommes nés pour la comprendre avec ses mots lacrymogènes, avec ses mots matraques. Speak white, tell us again about freedom and democracy. Nous savons que liberté est un mot noir, comme la misère est nègre, et comme le sang se mêle à la poussière des rues d'Alger ou de Little Rock. Speak white. De Westminster à Washington, relayez-vous. Speak white comme à Wall Street, white comme à Watts. Be civilized. Et comprenez notre parler de circonstances. Quand vous nous demandez poliment, how do you do? Et nous entendez vous répondre, we're doing all right. We're doing fine. We are not alone. Nous savons que nous ne sommes pas seuls.
Michel Lalonde and Speak White. We'll go out with a poem from the Totally Corrupt album from the Dial of Poems series put out by John Giorno by Ed Dorn. Here it is. We'll be back next week with another hour-long presentation of the spoken word for your listening enjoyment.
We survey the Colorado Plateau. There are no degrees of reality in this handsome and singular mass, or in the extravagant geometry of its cliffs and pinnacles. This is all water carved, the body thrust into the hydrosphere, and where the green mesas give way to the Vulcan floor, not far from Farmington and other interferences with the perfect night and the glittering trail of the silent Via Láctea, there is a civil scar so cosmetic one can't see it. A superimposition drawn up like the ultimate property of the ego, an invisible claim to a scratchy indultum from which smoke pours forth. But now, over the endless sagey brush, the moon makes her silvery bid, and in the cool, dry air of the night, the wind wankles across the cattle grid. All right, now I'll read a little scene from the cafe Sargun in downtown Cortez, Colorado. Our party assembles from out of the thin air. I comes through the door, twirling his psychonosis in his fingers, and throws it at effective intervals into the air like a Texas cheerleader. And when he drops it behind his back, which is quite often, according to the formula, he turns around to pick it up with a dainty bending of his knees and an expression of, "Oh, that doesn't matter," on his vibrant lips as he hums, "Just for today, I will not be afraid, and I will enjoy murdering now that I can perform all by myself an act of oblivion." "What do you want for breakfast?" the manager shouted. "Give me a drum roll and a cymbal crash," I glared through the propeller of his baton. "He should have stayed in Greece," everything muttered. "He's coked out to his ears and he's spewing with chewing gum." "Hello, everything. Thought you'd never get here." "Hi there, Lil. Did you all keep me in mind?" "Oh, look, I wish I had some of those things everything's eating." "That's a dish of etzalkalitzli," Lil said, extending her hand. "Corn and beans." "Fascinating," I said, taking it. "Everything you got produce all over your lapel. Say, what's that other bowl of matter stationed before you like a Hollywood award?" "Crawfish pie," everything shuddered. "Crawfish pie is frozen for certain in Cortez, everything," I nodded. "So that should get you right for Apache time." "Oh, is this Apache time?" everything doubted. "No, it's sublime time," I screamed. "Los cajeros llenen menguante nueva divine. Ay, 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 ay," I sang in motion for the check. "That's where I fell in love, when stars above came out to play." The slinger was standing in the sun by the stage, his cheek reflecting the fairness of a winter spent in Bisbee, when the mayor's wife, a formidable lady wearing a string of pearls and a baby blue cardigan, came along the buckled boardwalk. He stepped smartly up to her and said, "Howdy, ma'am," and presented a large bouquet, red roses, expertly rendered in solid lead. And as she felt their great weight in her arms, a smile of regret raced across her superbly fastidious and disapproving lips as she sank slowly through the boards, out of sight.
So that concludes this week's edition of Gray of Chromatex. Tonight we presented the work of Fluxus artist Ben Patterson. Check him out over the World Wide Web. Until next week, stay safe, and we'll be back next Thursday with another hour-long presentation of the spoken word. Till then.
Swanee Parolpopolo is back, and in real life for its 22nd edition. All the sights, sounds, and sensations of live music. After 2 years of online adaptation, Swanee is filling up the month of June with liberated music of all genres. Over 45 events and 90 participating artists performing indoors, outdoors, streamed for maximum accessibility. Record and book launches, workshops, a puppet show, a satellite Swanee happening in Wakefield, Quebec, of all places, and, of course, much more. For all the goodies, check out swaneeparolpopolo.org. Masks will, of course, be required. For your audio program guide, tune in to the Montreal Sessions, Tuesday, May 24th, May 31st, and June 7 and 14th, from 3 till 5 p.m. The Swanee crew hosts will be serving up highlights of what to expect at this year's festival. This is, of course, a CKUT co-presentation.
you ready for the sound experience of a lifetime? Are you ready for crystal clarity in sonic bliss? Are you ready for CKUT? We're ready for you. 90.3 on your FM dial.
Merci beaucoup, Madame Saint-Onge. En fait, l'intro de Francis et les exerciceurs sur les ondes de CKUT Radio McGill.